Hello, lovely listeners, and welcome back to We're All Made of Stories. I'm Ellie Royce. I write stories for children. I help older people tell their stories and just generally wallow around in stories as much as I possibly can. Today on the podcast, I'm swapping stories with my buddy in mischief, Zoe Collins. But before we get started, I'd just like to acknowledge the traditional owners of Gumbangya Country, where I live and work, and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. The podcast had a bit of a hiatus due to, as I refer to it, the great technical meltdown of 2021. But it seems like we're back on the road now. So thanks very much for being here. I appreciate that you are taking the time to listen. I hope you enjoy. Here's the podcast.
Hello, Zoe. Long time no
see. Hi, Ellie.
We're back.
Hello. Tap, tap, tap.
We've finally got our act together, and after the great technical meltdown earlier in the year where I lost everything, the first thing I just want to say is to thank you for Gemma Patience for her shout out of the previous incarnation of the podcast, because a lot of that stuff I'm still trying to get back, and hopefully I've got a couple of episodes that I recorded with some lovely American kidlit authors that I want to post at some point, but I'm still trying to sew it all back together. So that's something to look forward to in the future. But meanwhile, Zoe and I have got the band back together, and we're going to talk about what's on our minds, I think. Is that what we're going to talk about today?
Sure. That's about all I'm capable of today. A bit hectic.
Yes.
The last couple of days.
It's been a bit hectic the last 6 months, I think, really. A lot of people, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I don't know. You're the boss. You tell me what you like.
I don't mind at all. My first thing is living intuitively, living more intuitively. That's something that's on my mind at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice.
You know, if you want to talk about that, we can talk about that, or we can talk about what you've got organised.
Well, I've literally written down that the thing that's coming up for me lately is writing, business and mental health.
Right.
So, I think living intuitively thing is actually going to feed in extremely beautifully to what I've been thinking and talking about.
Yeah,
so I think you go.
That comes into everything. Well, the other things that I wanted to talk about too was I have mentioned this to you before, is narrative therapy, which is something that I'm just finishing a short course in, and
nice.
And just general stories and storytelling as well, which I've been talking to you about. And so but about living intuitively, I mean, I've always more or less done that without being too conscious of it.
But, you've done it intuitively?
I've done it intuitively. I've lived intuitively, quite intuitively. But of late, recent months, recent life events have sort of caused me to step back and have a look at things again. As you know, I became a grandmother in June, which I was not expecting. And I don't know why I wasn't expecting this, because being a mother is massive.
Yeah.
And being a grandmother is also incredibly massive. And I wasn't actually expecting it to be as massive as what it is, because obviously it's my daughter who is going through the main event. But I found it really, really transformative and pretty important. Mm. I mean, you know, I've done menopause already, but this was even more transformative than that, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's quite crazy how, you know, and I guess I kind of relived my mother transformation as part of the grandmother thing. And, and it just made me step back and think, what the hell do I want to do for the next 30 years of my life, if that's how long I've got left, and what do I want this new person to, how can I contribute to what this new person takes into himself, and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. It is beautiful, but I also, I stopped and thought about it instead of just just rolling through. And mainly because I went there to spend probably 4 weeks with them and could only stay for two because of lockdown. So I felt a bit cheated. So I think I spent the next 2 weeks sort of thinking about what I would have done if I was there and what I would have told them if I was there and what I would have shared with them if I was there. So I kind of had that journey by myself. Yeah. Mm. And I just thought that, tuning into our intuitive self is not a bad way to run things at a certain level. I mean, obviously there's practical and logical and all that sort of stuff that has to come into it as well. And honestly, I'm an over-preparer. You know, I like to have my structure and my logic and all that sort of stuff. But I think underneath it all or on top of it all or at the beginning of the whole process, you know, I'm really finding that I'm enjoying. And the more I do it, the more I find that it aligns with everything else that I'm doing anyway, you know, and I'll do some intuitive exploration and think, damn, I'm doing that already. That's good. Isn't you know, that that's comforting. Yeah, yeah.
So would it be the same or along the same lines as mindfulness? Like, is it about noticing your intuition?
I guess
it is. Because you already do things intuitively, but is it more about actually acknowledging those things?
I think it's about acknowledging. I think it's actually about self-trust as well. And it's almost almost like tuning in to maybe some kind of tuning into your true self and your truth, your personal truth, and what feels right to you and what doesn't feel right to you. And even if you have to do stuff that doesn't feel right to you, which you shouldn't really have to do, but we all have to. Knowing why it doesn't feel right and knowing that you're choosing to do it for, you know, some reason or some outcome. I could say something there, but I don't want to open a can of worms, so I'm not actually going to go there after all. I just thought.
I was about to ask you a question which I thought might open a can of worms.
do you want to open the can of worms? Open the can of worms. We can always edit it out later.
I don't know. For some reason, I've just lost my train of thought, and that might be my intuition saying, don't do it.
Okay.
I just thought it maybe what would be an example of doing something that you don't want to do, but you've consciously made that decision knowing that it's maybe for the best. I when you were saying that, I could not think of anything because I feel like I've spent a lot of time. Look, I think from a personal level, I find it really hard to be true to myself. I have my whole life. I've always wanted to make people laugh and make sure everyone else is okay, because if everyone else is okay, then I can be okay. Mm. So when you were talking about that, I was a bit like, I can't really, like I knew that it was something that doesn't come naturally to me. Yeah, but I have been working really hard at finding out what is my intuition, I guess, and that I can trust myself. I don't need to ask someone else's opinion before I make my own. So I guess I've been working so hard on doing that that I now can't kind of figure out, well, what would I do that would go against my truth or my calling or whatever. Can you give me an example?
Well, the only example I can think of, like I said, is going to open a can of worms, but I'll open it anyway. Why not? That's why we're here.
Okay.
Well, I'm fully vaccinated.
Me too, Ellie.
And you know what? I had to think long and hard about it before I did it. And because of all the information, misinformation, and, you know, just my normal state, fortunately for me, is relatively healthy, so I don't have to access medication of any kind very often. And I found it quite challenging to think about it. And then I thought to myself, you know, it became apparent that because you know, I hate using this word unprecedented, and you know, people use it all the time, and you know, because it is an unprecedented situation, and because it's a big deal to get your head around. I found it hard to to, like, my intuition said to me, sit back and wait and see what happens. However, that's not a possibility. And to myself, I know that what I want to do, what I want to be able to do, is to travel and see my family and see my grandbaby and make sure they're healthy and make sure they're safe and, you know, keep myself as healthy as possible, keep my family as healthy as possible, and be able to go and see them. And that's what it boiled down to for me. So, and it was no big deal in the end. However, I had to think about it a bit at first, you know, and my intuition was telling me to wait. And I said to my intuition, well, fuck you, I can't do that this time. We just have to do this, right? Because of this and this and this. And it was fine. It's been fine so far. So it's funny, and I don't want to say to anyone else this, you know, you should or shouldn't. This isn't completely my opinion. I don't want to open that can.
I'm happy enough to go on the record to say that I think everyone should. But that's because I have friends who, for this, for them, this is not, this is their normal. So I have a friend with cystic fibrosis, and every flu season, she's like, oh my God, if only people would wash their hands and if only people would get a flu jab, then she could probably live a bit more of a normal life. So, you know, but having said that, Ellie, when this whole vaccine to vaccine, should I, shouldn't I thing came up for me, I was really scared. Like because I had the same resistance. I was like, no, my intuition's telling me.
It was just saying too soon. That's what saying.
I was just, I need more information. I got to sit back. And then I realized actually what was holding me back was willful ignorance on my part and fear. I was really scared that, I would have a reaction. I have a bit of a history of sensitivity to things. So in the end, I was like, hold on, who am I? What am I doing? Why am I so afraid? Get the information and then go and get it done, because it's not just about me and my feelings. It's about so many other people, and we have an elder in our family who has extreme immune system compromised stuff going on, and babies, and you know, there's just too much. So yeah, I did the same thing, but I only just finished. I got my second one on Saturday, and I was ready to have my 3 days in bed. I'd flagged it with the husband and the children. I was like, I might be not well this weekend. I might not be able to go to that birthday party. And, you know, I might be quite unwell. And then, of course, I was 100% fine. I didn't even have a headache.
Yes, I was telling everyone poorly. I might be poorly. If you don't hear from me for 3 days, it's because I'm poorly after the vaccination. And I was a little poorly, not a lot poorly. My arm was very sore and I felt a bit achy and, you know, that kind of thing. A couple of days.
And you had on the whole.
No, I had Pfizer.
Oh, you had Pfizer. So Pfizer, did I.
Yes. We were just lucky. Like, it was just one of those synchronicitous events. And that was the other thing I told my intuition. I said to intuition, I said, look, this has just come out of the blue, like a golden gift dropped in your lap. And I'm not going to say no to that, because there's all these poor people who are desperately waiting, and I'm not going to be that fool. Oh my goodness, look at this. Puppy's just come to join us.
Are you ready to say hello to this puppy?
Who is? Yes. Yes,
sorry,
I can.
Sorry to interrupt.
I can speak.
His name's Kratz. Oh. He's not my dog.
He's beautiful.
Say hello. You can't talk on the radio.
Hello,
he doesn't speak on podcast. Looking a bit shy.
You could breathe close to the microphone.
He likes to cuddle me. I'm at my friend's house doing this podcast because our internet went down this morning.
Oh, I see.
So I rang my friend Ricky. Hi, Ricky. Shout out to my bestest buddy, Ricky. And I said, can I come to your house? She said, sure. So here we are, Kratz and me cuddling.
Oh, good.
He doesn't normally have a green bow in his hair.
It's very attractive.
We've had a chat about it. I said to him, I'm just going to take a photo for the show notes. How's that?
Yeah.
You, Kratz, lovely. Camera, babe.
You and Kratz.
Yes, I had a chat with him about the bow, and he said his little girl of the family, like the little girl in the family does not want the bow removed, so upsetting.
Well, look, you know, I've written books about drag queens. I have no issues with boy dogs wearing bows or anything else they'd like to wear, or any other kinds of boys of any description wearing.
I'm just not sure Kratz is really feeling the bow vibe.
No, he doesn't look like he is.
No, he just wants cuddles with Auntie Zoe, favourite auntie. Anyway, sorry to interrupt. He's just giving me a cuddle.
That's all right. I'm always happy to be interrupted by doggies. That's what I'm thinking about with intuition.
Yes.
You know, you have to work with it, I think. You know, but I think that even when you do something that may initially or continuously go against your intuition, as long as you know, well, I mean, you know, obviously that depends. I'm not talking about anything tragic or anything like that. I'm just talking about the things we have to do in our day-to-day lives that maybe, you know, we'd prefer. I'd prefer to be laying in a bubble bath sipping on a white lady, you know, than doing whatever it is that I'm doing right now. Not literally, right. not meaning that I don't want to podcast with you, but, you know, sometimes there are those scenarios in life, you know, and your intuition would be telling you that, no, this isn't optimum. But at the same time, I think that when it gets hard is when you don't have that inner knowledge that, yes, I would rather be doing this, or, yes, I feel pulled to do something else. But for the moment, because of A, B or C, I'm going to do this. But to not lose that, it's when you don't know why you're doing things and you get really angry and upset, I think, sometimes, you know. And I think that's why asking your intuition before you start stuff or before you take a step forward, just to see, just to check in and see what yourself is trying to tell yourself, you know. I think that's a good thing to do.
I think that leads me into the writing that I've been thinking about, because lately I have been struggling a lot with not quite knowing what's going on. I'm feeling flat. I was feeling flat. I'm much better now, but I just intuitively picked up a pen one day, and I've got this notebook which I've been carrying around, and I used to do this all the time, right? And I just have started to, in the gaps of my day, so if I turn up to an appointment early or if I'm waiting for the kids in the car or whatever, I've just started doing that intuitive writing, like just sitting there and kind of doing a brain dump, or, you know, it's a bit like the morning pages, but I don't do it in the mornings because mornings, you know, that's too much to do. So, I found that really helpful, and I do know too that that's also the way that I do art the best, is when I don't have an outcome in mind, when I just follow my body really and I don't let my what's the word, like, I see I've forgotten all of the lingo, but I don't let my conscious brain make the decisions for me. I just try to get myself into the flow as quickly and efficiently as I can, because I generally don't have heaps of time to potter. And I do find that if I tap into that, then things reveal themselves to me that then help me make sense of what's been going on, where I am right now, and kind of where I need to go. So, yeah, I think that might feed into living intuitively.
Yeah, well, that is.
See, I have a hard time living. I'm so much in my head that I have to stop myself and do the writing, do the art, you know, talk to the dog. Isn't he cute?
Yeah, he is. He's beautiful.
Face.
He's very beautiful.
He's not naughty. He's perfect.
Is he?
Yeah, I come over here and he's just this darling little creature. Oh. My dog is like a hurricane. You walk in the house and she's just wriggling around, whacking into things, grabbing onto you with her mouth. Like, she's really mouthy.
Yeah.
Oh, she's just, oh, she licks constantly. But anyway, but I love beautiful. Her.
Yes, I was going to say you love her to pieces.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, So I'm just trying to tune into that a bit more often. And instead of trying to think about it and decide something with my head, I'm trying to consciously incorporate the intuitive as well as part of the decision-making process, you know, incorporate all the information and then take steps forward.
Yeah. So,
yeah, and that goes for, you know, creative projects and things as well, very much so. I mean, when you're actually in the flow, like in the creative project, intuition obviously is everything, you know, a huge part of that. But even just in, what I am going to do today, I have my list of jobs. How do I feel about all of this? You know, which one will I pick to do today? And it's really weird how often, you know, when I've done that, it actually turns out that it's not a job as much as I thought it was going to be. I mean, I had to do my blinds a couple of weekends ago. Got these big, the timber blinds with the big slats in my lounge room and the dining room. There are
I thought that might
lot
have been a euphemism.
No.
It's like, uh-oh, where are we going now?
Literal blinds. And it's a big job, takes a long time, because the only way I can actually do it, I've tried all the things that you clean blinds with and all those little finger things, none of them work. All I've got to do is, like, make it into a flat piece of timber, dust it all with one duster, then get my floor wash stuff that I put the oil into so that they don't, you know, go crack, wash it like it's a floor, except it's not. It's up here. So I'm waving my arms around. You can't see this, everybody, but I'm waving my arms around. Then once I've done all of that, you got to dry it. You get another rag and you dry it all. And then you flip it over and you do it again. And that's one blind. So anyway, it's a big job. And I was not looking forward to it at all. I never am. I enjoy it every 6 months. I can get away with it. And but because we live in a tropical sort of semi-tropical place, we have a lot of open windows, a lot of rain.
Yeah.
So the dust sort of turns into mud on them. Anyway, long story short, a bit shorter.
The great story.
I didn't want to do it. And then my intuition told me this is the day to do it. And I started doing it, put some music on, and I actually really enjoyed myself.
I know exactly what you mean. I spend so much of my time knowing how much I'm going to hate something and resisting. And then I'm like, the moment comes and I pounce.
Yeah. That's right. And then it's done and then you're like, oh, that was not so bad at all.
Yeah. I actually had to phone a high school. I can't even, honestly. So my children are small and we are already thinking about high school, right? I don't know if this is a Brisbane thing, but someone who I really like has recently said to me, oh, you should phone that school that you've applied to and see if, you know, where your kids are on the list. And I'm like, what? Are you for real?
How old are they?
And then, 8 is the oldest. So there's like 3 or 4 years until high school.
Ways off,
8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, anyway, I can't add up. So it might be like 2 years. It's not. It's 3 or 4. And I kind of heard that and it sat in my body, right, this feeling of, oh, what am I missing out on? And then I noticed a few other things going on, lots of other kids going for interviews and stuff. I thought, oh, shit, what am I doing? Am I neglecting my children? So, Ellie, this was the moment when I went against my intuition and I phoned the school, right?
Yep.
And this is also also tying into the story about how you really don't want to do things and I resist. So, anyway, I finally got on the freaking phone, excuse my language, and I encountered the two most delightful women I have come into contact with in ages. And we had a lovely little chat about how much I don't care where they are on the list and how I just really wanted to be reassured that I didn't need that information. And, the one who has all the information said, look, you know, I do get people ringing up and they're really worried about it. And she said, I will tell you, your kid is 206 on the list and we only take 75. And she said, but it's really useless information because we do intakes and outtakes and cancellations and all this stuff. And she said, you won't know until middle of next year at the earliest whether we can even have a further conversation. Mm. So she said, there's really no point in ringing me. And I went, yes. I was right.
And now you're armed with that information next time somebody says something to you about ringing.
No, I'm just going to be like, yeah, I don't care. Like, But anyway, she expected me to start crying when she said 206. But my reaction was, oh, thank God. And she was quite taken aback at a certain point. She's like, oh, well, I was expecting you to be really upset about that. I'm like, well, you just told me that it's not uncommon for you to lose 200 applicants because people apply to every single school in Brisbane. I don't know. It's just a whole new world for me, Ellie. I went to Caboolture High, darling. I don't understand this.
That's very different. I went to high school like 40 years ago. So, you know, it was a bit different in my day.
Oh, you know, same. Like, I'm pretty sure it was about 30 years
ago. I just went. Just went to school.
Yeah, I just turned up and I did really well because, you know, that was my personality, like lucky me.
Yeah.
So, yes, that was that little story, that little anecdote was all about the intuition and also about how much I hate doing anything.
Except what you want to do. Exactly. So sometimes you have to do things that you don't really want to do. They don't always turn out bad.
Do you know what else has been on my mind that I just remembered?
What a great segue. What?
Your sourdough.
Oh, my sourdough. Yes, my sourdough. God, I love making that. That's mental health for me. That is mental health all the way for me. I love doing that so much. That was another serendipitous thing that happened. The starter just got left behind.
Did someone just turn up and leave it?
Yeah, my son-in-law and daughter came to visit from Melbourne, strangely enough, or they live at Castlemaine now. But, and he was making it at the time. And I always thought, oh, no, it's too hard, it's too hard, it's too hard, it's going to be too hard. You know, you have to do things to it all the time. You have to do – no, it's not. It lives in the fridge until Thursday. Thursday I get it out of the fridge and I tip a bit out and I put a cup of flour and water in. Friday I do tip it out and put a cup of flour and water in, and the bit that tips out, I mean, you can make stuff out of that starter if you want to.
Yeah.
You can make crumpets and all kinds of things, but I haven't got time for that. So I just I like crumpets, but I don't have time to make them. I tip that into the compost bin, the starter that comes out. So you put that half a cup of flour, half a cup of water in. So you're basically feeding it the same amount as you're tipping out, half and half of water and flour. Do that Friday, and then on Saturday morning, and then I make the loaves on Saturday. This is my routine that I've gotten into. You don't have to do this, obviously. And then
I'm taking notes.
And then it goes back in the fridge on Saturday afternoon after I've fed it and let it sit there for a bit, and then it comes out again the Thursday after. Like some people feed it every day and they say, oh, it uses up all this flour and all that sort of stuff. And making the loaf is so easy. It's just water, salt and starter, and you knead it for half an hour, which is lovely and meditative and really nice. You let it sit there for a couple of hours, you belt it down, break it into two, shove it in the oven the next morning, and away you go. And you got this bloody brilliant bread that tastes like nothing you've ever eaten in your life, and it's flour and water and salt. It just boggles my mind every time.
So here's the burning question.
Sorry, you got me started. You shouldn't have mentioned sourdough.
No, I have the burning question is, does it, can you post some to me? Does it work like that? Or do I have to like find someone who's got some?
What, post you some starter? Just some bread?
No, not some bread. I can get bread anywhere. I could probably get starter too, but
I probably could. I don't know.
I just asked because people do that with kombucha. They put it in Ziploc bags and post it to each other. And I'm like, oh, some sourdough from Ellie.
It's potentially possible. I'll look into it because I'd love to send you some. That'd be great. No, that'd be fun.
We could have like the sourdough connection.
Yes.
We could raise sourdough together. I'd say I'm just going to call Auntie Ellie.
That'd be great. Yeah. I'll look into that because, it's a lot harder than you think. You know, you don't have to baby it. And, I mean, you know, people do all kinds of special things. I don't have time for all of that. So I just found the simplest instructional thing on YouTube that I could find, and got some tips from my son-in-law. And again, there's another thing about intuition. You know, on sourdough you do the slash on the top. Slash it before you put it in.
Yeah.
And the way people used to know that it was theirs when they used to have communal ovens was that they all had their own signature, like their slash was their. I know.
That's the coolest thing ever.
It is. And mine, mine's turned out to be a spiral. I do this spiral all the way around the bread. And my hand goes to do something else because I started off doing slashes and then I ended up doing these spirals, and my hand goes to do something different and just does. So that's mine. If we had the communal ovens, that would be mine. That would be my
intuitive sourdough thinging.
And it's funny because everyone started making sourdough apparently in 2020, in the lockdown in 2020, and they're all saying, oh, you know, sourdough, so lockdown 2020. I just think it's the best thing that's happened in my life for a long time. I'm just so grateful that I learned how simple it is to make fabulous bread.
I'm grateful too.
That. You're grateful that I've learned how to make fabulous bread.
you in particular. Yeah.
And you know what else? And you know, here's this: the awesomeness of everything that I'm always talking about as well. It blows my mind that you can put flour and water together and sit it on a bench, and in a week you got a thing that makes bread. You know, the yeast from the air goes in there. It's science. Yep. It's art, it's magic, all at the same time. It's bloody amazing. Yep.
I'm with you. I often say to, like, I'll cook something and my husband's hilarious. He's like the guy off the castle. Oh, love, this is amazing.
What do you call this, love?
What do you call this? Rizzles. And I'm like, rizzles, darling. Although recently it was chicken pie, darling. And honestly, it was the best chicken pie anyone's ever had, like ever. It was amazing.
Brilliant.
But I did sit there. We were eating this pie. It was like we were in, you know, some spiritual experience. We should have been in church. And I was like, oh, my God, like this is just, Phil, I swear to God, this is just chicken, pastry, some crappy old veggies and dates and a few spices. Like it really was the simplest. And I had been like, oh, I don't know if I want to try that. And then yes, my intuition broke through and said, yeah, you do. Bitch.
Just do it. Would you just do it? Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? It's really good.
Mm. Yeah. The science of heat temperatures and ingredients just blows my mind constantly. Yeah. Eggs are amazing. Like who invented egg? Give them a clap on the back.
Well done. Anyway, well done you.
Geez, this is a very intelligent conversation, isn't it?
Oh, I don't think. Does it matter? It doesn't matter what we talk
about. No, I'm just having fun.
That's what I like about our conversations. They can go anywhere and that's the way we like it. We didn't talk about narrative therapy. We'll have to do that next time.
I'm actually very interested in that because, do you know, in one of my moments of panic that I'm never going to be good enough and I'm never going to succeed and I'm a shit artist, I Googled, but it wasn't just negativity. I was also thinking, I love teaching. I just want to teach people. I Googled art therapy because I thought, yes, I could be an art therapist. And then I realized it's actually a psychology degree. And I don't think I've got the resilience to actually help people in that way. I think I'm much more able to just say, let's do some art together and you will feel great afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, working in as I do, I'm an arts and health advocate. So working with older people as I do, all these things that we do, like you teaching people art and how to unlock their creativity and have a good time and have fun. And, you know, I do a lot of work with people with stories and storytelling and all that kind of thing. And I don't go into it with therapeutic intent, but that is one of the side benefits of doing the process, you know. So I think it's
Hang on, that's exactly what I was trying to articulate. But My intention is not to fix anyone.
Yeah, that's right.
Or to even facilitate that. It's just if we could get together and I could lead you through, because I have so many people say to me, oh, you're so creative. I'm not creative at all. And I look at them and I'm like, yeah, you are. You just don't do it.
Yeah, of course
you are. It's a skill, man.
Yeah.
Creativity is not, it's not, it's a skill. And it is innate in me, but that's because I have spent my whole life doing it. Like I've honed it because it's my passion. So if it's not your passion, it doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means you don't do it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like that's how I view it.
Yeah. And people have a view of creativity as creativity is art.
That's
and
true.
They don't realize that they're actually extremely creative, but perhaps not.
Yeah.
In, you know, not producing art, but perhaps they are wonderful gardeners and or, you know, perhaps they make killer sourdough with beautiful spirals on top. Or
I reckon those people are the most creative.
I'm sure they must be.
I want in on that action, mate.
Yeah, you do. That's very cool.
Actually, I was just thinking about one of the example of a person. I have recently been doing some work, like some workshops, that's the word I'm after, but I call them play dates because I'm not teaching anyone a skill. I'm just, I'm just facilitating. I don't know what I'm doing. But I went into my kids' school and had the teachers with me for an hour and a half, and they were all, it was so funny because I thought, I wonder what it's going to be like to teach teachers. And yeah, I know. I sort of freaked myself out for a little bit. But the funniest thing was the assistant principal, who I didn't really know very well, and I was a little bit intimidated by. She's extremely good looking, and that kind of always makes me go, "Oh, I don't know if I'm going to be good enough or something." I don't know.
I don't know if we're going to speak the same language, because your experience has probably been very.
And she would die if she heard me say that. She would die.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem to be very vain at all. But in working with her, a few of her insecurities came out. About, oh, I'm not very creative and I don't think I'll be able to do this, but I'll put it on for the staff and it'll be really good for them. And the funniest thing was I got to her, there's 13 of them, so it was a huge, huge room of people that I sort of had to kind of hold space for. But I got around to her and she said, well, I really like music, so I want to do this treble clef. And we were doing string art, right, so really basic childlike kind of thing. I want to do a treble clef. And I was like, really? Treble clef? It doesn't really, you know. I said, how does it make you feel when you're listening to music? And she started to make these movements with her hands, like this, like waves.
Yep.
Like almost bad 80s dance moves, like waving hands around. But she wasn't doing it consciously. She was sort of just talking to me about how I really just get into like the flow and it just calms me down. And I sort of looked at her and I said, well, why don't we replicate those hand movements that you're doing? I swear to God, Ellie, her string art was divine. It looked like a landscape. Like it had the most, it was only little, like they're only 15 by 15 or 20 by 20 centimeter. It looked like a beautiful landscape. And you could see the movement and the colors that she chose. And I just looked at her and I was like, you told me that you couldn't do this. I was like, look at that. Like, that is spectacular. It was unreal. It was such a moment.
Isn't that brilliant?
It just made me realize that, you know, really, I actually had my doubts about her as well. I thought, oh, maybe she's a bit too corporate. Like, she can be very, you know, she's a big woman. She's running a school.
She's a principal. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
well, assistant principal.
They're not talking.
Well, then that leads me to one last point about narrative therapy, and how people have what they call thin stories. How over our lives, like we start off being, you know, and I mean, you know, I'm a textile person, so I'm always talking in tapestries and weavings and threads and stuff, weaving together and knitting and whatnot. So I always see it as the fact that when we're younger, we sort of have all these strands in our life, you know, that weave together with our families and our culture and our community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's sort of how it all comes together. Our stories weave out and weave together, and that makes the tapestry of everything.
Yeah.
But as we get older, you know, those threads can quite often drop away from us until all we are, all we become is like that one big long thread that's the assistant principal. And the person that might like to do string art is drifted off into, you know, dangling on the ground down there. And narrative therapy is an interesting way of looking at your own life like a story, and as you are, as a character in that story, and going back into your history or her story and finding those threads that have gotten dropped along the wayside, and either replacing the story that you're telling yourself if that's causing like destructive and negative things to happen in your life, or replacing that with another story, something that perhaps is more positive and hopeful for you, or reweaving that back in to become more of a whole person again, because we only acknowledge bits and pieces of each other that we approve of. And it's so interesting, narrative therapy.
I really want to hear more about that, actually. I'm fascinated.
Maybe we can
that
talk
problem.
About that next time then, because I'll have my certificate by then. I'm doing my last part of the course today. And I'm not going to be a therapist. I was going to say to you before, when you were talking about art therapy, I have no desire to be a therapist either, but I'm really interested in, inspiring people and giving people information. That's what I'm interested in. And also I would like to create tools for people to use.
Yeah.
That might help them along on their journey. So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I've got some plans in my head for things like, you know, prompts and journals and a couple of things like that are sort of sitting around in my head at the moment, and especially for kids too, because they have a pretty hard time these days, a lot of them, you know, in life. So it's another way of looking at the hero's journey, but not a hero or heroine, but, you know, like you as the star of your own story. You're the star.
Yeah.
You know, you're important. Your story is important. Mm. Oh, well, watch this space. It's in there somewhere. The intuition's working on it right now. We'll see where we go. Yes.
Nice.
Thank you for chatting.
That's
great. Great fun.
All right. It was really cool. I enjoy it very much. Look forward to the next one.
That's very good. I do too. Thanks, Zoe. Signing off. Bye.
Well, lovely listeners, thanks so much for being here for this Next Generation We're All Made of Stories podcast. Just so you know, you can find Zoe online at www.zoecollinsart. You can find her lurking around on Facebook and Instagram at Hoodlum Friends. You can find me online at www.ellieroyceauthor.com, or you can also find me at www.weareallmadeofstories.com. It's the same website, so either of those you'll find me. And on Instagram, I lurk around as Ellie Royce Kidlit Author. And the podcast proper Instagram account is called Made of Stories with Ellie Royce. I'd love you to leave a comment on there or, of course, on the podcast itself. Let me know what you think. Leave a review. Let us know if there's anything that's on your mind that you'd like to talk about. Talk to you soon. See ya.